Okay, so for today's deep dive, we're going to be looking into a super interesting case in environmental law.
Definitely an important one.
Yeah, Columbia Falls Aluminum Company versus EPA.
It's one of those cases, you really start to see just how the EPA, how they go about making regulations, how they work.
Yeah, and for anyone listening who's, in law school or thinking about environmental law, administrative law, this case is a perfect example of how all that comes together, how you get those challenges that are based on scientific methodology.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that makes this case so interesting is that it boils down to a really fundamental question.
Okay, what's that?
Can the EPA, can they actually rely on a specific lab test? In this case, it's called the Toxicity Characteristic Leaching Procedure, or TCLP.
TCL
Yeah.
time.
To decide how hazardous waste is handled, can they do that even when, real-world evidence might be showing that the test, well, maybe it's not painting the most accurate picture.
Yeah.
It's not really reflecting what's going on outside the lab.
So we're going to look at how all of this.
Right. Yeah. Spent pot liner.
Which is a byproduct of aluminum production.
Right. Exactly.
And so our goal, in this deep dive today, we're really going to try to understand why this kind of dispute matters, what it tells us about how the EPA goes about regulating
Yeah,
things.
their process,
Yeah,
their
exactly.
thought process.
And also, just how important the courts are in all of this. When you have scientific models and what happens in the real world, maybe they don't quite line up.
It's that intersection between the science and the law.
Exactly. So let's start with the basics. Spent pot liner. It's a pretty technical term. What exactly are we talking about here?
So when you think about aluminum production, right, you've got this smelting process.
Okay.
And in this process, they use these huge containers called pots.
Pots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And over time, the lining of these pots, it kind of absorbs all this nasty stuff.
Oh, so it's like the leftover, the residue from the aluminum process?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
And it's not just any residue. We're talking things like arsenic, fluoride, and cyanide in really high concentrations.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you definitely don't want that ending up in your average landfill.
No, that doesn't sound good. So the EPA, I'm assuming, recognizing that this stuff is dangerous, stepped in to regulate how we get rid of it, how we dispose of it.
Yeah, that's right. So they set these treatment standards for this spent pot liner.
Okay.
And what these standards do is they put limits on how much of these hazardous substances, how much can actually leach out, dissolve and kind of seep away after it's disposed
Okay,
of.
so they're trying to control how much that stuff can get out into the environment.
Exactly.
You know?
And then on top of that, they also said, hey, you can't just dump untreated spent pot liner straight into landfills. There's a ban on that.
Makes sense. So I'm guessing there's a specific way that they determine whether or not this treated pot liner is actually meeting those safety standards.
Right. And that's where this TCLP test comes in.
Okay, so that test, it's like a simulation of some sort.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
It tries to mimic what would happen if this waste ended up in a your typical municipal solid waste landfill.
Okay, so they're trying to predict what would happen in a real landfill.
Exactly.
Got it.
They're trying to see how those toxic substances could potentially, escape and maybe even contaminate groundwater.
Yeah, like how they would leach out under those conditions.
Right. And landfills tend to be kind of acidic.
Oh.
So the TCLP tries to recreate those conditions in the lab.
Got it. So how did they actually use this test to set the standards for spent pot liner?
So they looked at a specific treatment process.
Okay.
This process was being used by Reynolds Metals Company.
Okay, so they were kind of using that as a model.
Yeah, a model for how to treat this stuff.
Okay.
And they basically said, okay, if the treated pot liner passes this TCLP test, meaning it doesn't leach out too many of those hazardous substances under these simulated conditions, then it's good to go.
It meets the standard.
Right.
Okay. So that all sounds, logical in theory,
Right.
but I have a feeling, based on where we're going with this, that something didn't quite go according to plan in the real world.
Yeah, you got it.
So tell me about this Reynolds Metals monofill. What happened there?
So this is where things get really interesting. So you've got these TCLP tests, right? And based on these tests, it looked like the levels of, the arsenic and fluoride and all that, it should have been within the EPA's safety limits after disposal.
Okay, so it passed the test, basically.
Yeah, but then they looked at the actual leachate.
Leachate.
Yeah, uh-huh. The liquid that was draining out of this this place called the Reynolds Metals Monofill.
Okay, so remind me, what is a monofill again?
Oh, a monofill, it's basically a special kind of landfill.
Okay.
And it's designed to hold just one specific type of waste.
Okay, so it's not like your regular landfill with all sorts of stuff mixed in.
Exactly.
Got it.
So Reynolds Metals, yeah, they had this monofill specifically for their treated spent pot liner.
Okay.
But here's the kicker. This monofill, it had alkaline conditions.
Alkaline, meaning?
High pH.
Okay, and why does that matter?
Well, it turns out that alkaline environment, it changed how the contaminants in the pot liner, you know, how they actually behave.
Oh, interesting.
Like arsenic and fluoride, they became way more mobile.
Mobile.
Yeah, they leached out, you know, dissolved into the liquid at much higher concentrations than the TCLP test had predicted.
Oh, wow. So the test was basically assuming a more acidic environment, but in the real world, the monofill was alkaline.
Exactly.
And that made a huge difference.
Yeah, huge difference. The leachate from the monofill had way more of these hazardous substances than the EPA standards allowed.
And even more than what the TCLP test had predicted.
Way more.
So wait a minute. The lab test said it was safe, but the actual landfill was showing these really high levels of toxins.
Right. It's like, you know, the test just wasn't reflecting what was really happening out there in the real world.
That's a big problem. So what did the EPA do when they found out about this discrepancy with the Reynolds monofill?
You would think they would, like, you know, reevaluate their standards or change their approach, right?
Yeah. I mean, it seems like pretty crucial information.
You'd think so. But initially, they stuck with their treatment standard and that ban on untreated land disposal.
Really?
Yeah.
Even with that evidence?
Yeah. Their reasoning was, well, even though the treatment process, maybe it wasn't performed perfectly according to the TCLP test, they still saw it as a step forward.
A step forward. So they were basically acknowledging that the test wasn't perfect, but they felt like it was still better than nothing.
That seemed to be their thinking.
Hmm. Okay. So this is where the smaller aluminum manufacturers, including Columbia Falls, came in. They weren't too happy about this situation, were they?
No, not at all. They felt like the EPA was being unreasonable.
Okay. And so they decided to challenge these EPA rules in court, right?
Right.
Specifically, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Exactly.
And their main argument was that the EPA shouldn't be relying on this TCLP test anymore, especially with all this evidence showing that it wasn't really accurate, particularly for this alkaline environment in the Reynolds monofill.
Right. They were saying it's irrational to keep using this test when we know it's not giving us a reliable picture.
So this is where we get into this concept of arbitrary and capricious review, which is a big deal in administrative law. Can you break that down for us? What does that actually mean in the context of this case?
Okay, so arbitrary and capricious. It's this legal standard that courts use to, you know, kind of check up on government agencies, make sure they're not doing things that are just completely out there.
So it's a way for the courts to make sure the agencies are acting reasonably.
Exactly.
Okay.
And it comes from something called the Administrative Procedure Act.
The APA.
Right. And basically what it means is, if a court thinks that an agency's decision, you know, like a rule they made or an action they took, if it just doesn't make sense, if it's not based on evidence, or if they didn't really consider all the important factors, the court can overturn that decision.
So they're not saying, like, we know better than the agency.
Right.
They're just saying, hey, you need to show us that you went through a logical process here.
Exactly. Show your work.
Yeah.
Make sure it's based on reason and logic.
Got it. Okay, so how did this all play out with the Columbia Falls case?
Yeah.
How did the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals apply this arbitrary and capricious standard to what the EPA was doing?
So the court, they really zeroed in on this whole conflict between, you know, on the one hand, what the TCLP test was saying, and on the other hand, the actual data, that leachate from the Reynolds monofill.
Right, that gap between the lab and the real world.
Exactly. And the court basically said, look, the TCLP is failing to predict what's actually happening
with those concentrations.
Yeah. And because of that, they said it lacked a, and this is a quote, rational relationship to reality.
A rational relationship to reality.
Yeah, they were basically saying the model, the EPA's scientific model, it just wasn't reliable.
It wasn't doing its job.
Right. It wasn't reflecting what was actually going on in that specific disposal environment with those alkaline conditions.
Okay, so the court is really emphasizing that the model has to match up with reality, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And they even pointed out that the EPA themselves, they admitted that they hadn't really considered these high alkaline conditions when they developed the TCLP.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because, you know, typical municipal landfills, they tend to be more acidic.
Right.
So the TCLP wasn't designed with this alkaline environment in mind.
So they basically admitted that their model wasn't accounting for this very specific real-world situation.
Exactly.
And the court obviously wasn't too happy about that.
No, they basically said, look, EPA, you have a duty to really think about the assumptions you're making when you're using these scientific models, especially when you have real-world data that's directly challenging those assumptions.
Like in this case.
Yeah, like in this case.
And I think that's a really crucial takeaway, not just for the EPA, but for any agency that's relying on these kinds of models.
Oh, yeah. It's so easy to kind of get caught up in the efficiency of a model.
Right.
You know, you think, oh, this is a standardized way to measure things.
Yeah.
But if you're not careful, it can blind you to all the variations, all the nuances that exist out in the real world.
Right.
And then the regulation, well, it might not actually be protecting the environment the way it's supposed to.
Yeah, because it's based on a flawed understanding of what's actually happening.
Exactly. So this case really forces us to think, you know, how do we balance this need for regulations that are scalable, you know, that can be applied broadly, with the need to be accurate, to really take into account the specifics of each situation?
It's a tough balance for sure. Okay, so back to the case. The court decided that the EPA's use of the TCLP was arbitrary and capricious.
And
so what did that actually mean for the rules, for the regulations themselves?
So because of this ruling, the court had to vacate. They had to throw out the treatment standard for spent potliner.
Okay, so that standard was essentially gone.
Gone.
And why was that?
Well, because the whole standard, the way it was written, it was entirely based on this flawed TCLP test.
Oh, I see. So passing the test was the only way to be considered in compliance.
Exactly. And since the test was considered unreliable, well, the whole standard kind of fell apart.
It's like the foundation of the standard crumbled.
Yeah, exactly.
But it didn't stop there, did it?
No, it didn't.
There was this whole domino effect, right?
Right. So under CERCLA, which is the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, you know, also known as Superfund.
Yeah, Superfund.
So under CERCLA, they have this idea that treatment standards and land disposal restrictions, they're supposed to work together.
Okay.
They're like two sides of the same coin. So since the treatment standard got thrown out, the court said, well, we also have to vacate the ban on disposing of untreated spent potliner.
Oh, wow.
So one problem with the test led to this whole chain reaction.
Yeah, it really highlights how intertwined all these regulations are.
Absolutely. And it shows just how crucial it is to get the science right.
If the science is flawed, the whole regulatory structure can collapse.
Exactly.
So let's talk takeaways. What are the big lessons from this Columbia Falls case? What should our law student listeners, what should they be taking away from all of this?
Well, for the EPA and really any regulatory agency out there, this case is a big wake-up call.
Okay.
It's basically saying, hey, you can't just rely on lab tests and models without making sure they actually reflect what's happening in the real world.
Right. You have to validate those models. You have to ground them in reality.
Right. And you also have to be ready to defend the assumptions that you're making when you're using these models, especially when you start getting real-world data that contradicts those assumptions.
Like with the alkaline monofill in this case.
Exactly.
And this also gets to a really core principle of administrative law, right?
Right.
Agencies have to be responsive to evidence, even when it's inconvenient.
Yeah, you can't just ignore the facts when they don't fit your narrative.
Exactly. So zooming out a bit, do you think this case has implications for other EPA regulations?
Oh, absolutely.
Or even regulations from other agencies?
Yeah, for sure. Especially those that rely heavily on, like, simulation tests or predictive models.
Okay.
This case basically throws open the door for legal challenges if those models can be shown to be out of touch with real-world outcomes.
So if the model doesn't match reality, it could be vulnerable.
Exactly. And I think for law students, you know, the big lesson here is to be critical, to really think about the science behind these regulations.
Don't just take it for granted.
Right. Just because an agency is using a fancy model or complicated test, it doesn't automatically mean it's good science.
And it doesn't mean it's legally sound either.
Exactly. Cases like Columbia Falls, they show us that even something that seems really technical, like a scientific model, it can be challenged in court.
Right.
And having a good understanding of the science, of the underlying scientific principles, that can be incredibly powerful in environmental litigation.
Absolutely. So just to bring it back to the real world impact here, you know, we've been talking about these technicalities, these legal arguments.
That's right.
But at the end of the day, this discrepancy between the lab test and the actual leachate, that could have meant that groundwater was being contaminated.
It could have posed a real risk to people's health, to the environment.
Especially communities near those landfills.
Exactly. So it's not just an abstract legal battle.
No, there are real stakes involved. Okay, so to wrap up our deep dive into Columbia Falls Aluminum Company versus EPA, the big takeaway here is that environmental regulations, they have to be based on solid science.
Right, and defensible methodology.
Exactly. And agencies like the EPA, they have to be constantly checking those models, those tests, making sure they're still valid. And they have to be willing to address any evidence that challenges their assumptions.
They can't just bury their heads in the sand.
Exactly. So it's a really powerful illustration of how science, law, and policy all intersect.
Right. And it leaves us with some pretty big questions to think about.
Okay, like what?
Like, how do we assess the validity of these predictive models?
Yeah, what are the tools we can use?
And what role do the courts play in making sure that regulations are actually based on evidence, on sound reasoning, not just on these theoretical simulations that might not reflect what's actually happening out in the world?
That's a great point to end on. Something for all of us to think about.
Definitely.
So thanks for joining us for this deep dive into Columbia Falls Aluminum Company versus EPA. It's a case that really gets to the heart of how we regulate, how we protect the environment, and the crucial role that science plays in that whole process. We'll see you next time.
See you then.